You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings. Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
Welcome back, Kings fans. The LA Kings take on the Oilers in Edmonton Saturday night, but before they do, the onslaught of coverage continues. LA Kings insider John Rosen joined me earlier this week for his season preview. We introduced you to our new podcast with Jim Fox and Alex Faust, and today, Dave Joseph and I answer the 10 biggest questions facing the 2019-20 LA Kings. And I know this will sound insane, but we're going to have another bonus episode for you later today. It'll be short and sweet. We're not trying to overload you, but believe me, you won't want to miss it because, spoiler alert, I spoke to Coach Todd McClellan. But first, let's head out to the Brian Engblom podcast studio in sunny El Segundo.
All right, take three. Joining me now, voice of the LA Kings at Staples Center, Dave Joseph. How are you doing today, Dave?
Jesse, I am great, brother. How are you?
I'm good.
These are great palatial studios you have here. Brand new microphones. You've got a mixing board, a recording device. You're stepping up your game for 2019-2020.
And we only had two failed attempts at starting this podcast. For a little look behind the curtains.
But now it's going on, so that's all that matters.
That's right.
We're here, and we're ready to go.
So we are going to skip some of the pleasantries because we've had two swipes at them now. I know the listeners won't have sat through it, but we're going to dive right into the top 10 questions facing the LA Kings heading into the 2019-20 season. Now, these are selected by me, so...
You and you only.
Yeah, deal with that.
Got it.
But this is what I think are the 10 most intriguing questions in reverse order heading into this season, Dave. We're going to start out with how many games is Tobias Bjornfoot, or Toby Barefoot as they're calling him, how many games will we see him in an LA Kings uniform this season?
Yeah, my gut is telling me 9.
That sounds right.
Why do I say 9, Jesse, you ask? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah.
Well, if Toby Barefoot plays any more than the 9 games, then he would have to burn the first year of his entry-level deal.
That's right.
So it's 9 or fewer.
Yeah.
And then they would send him back to...
Djurgården, I believe.
Europe, however you say that. Right.
Yeah.
So I would... my guess is... Even though he's had a great camp and he's played some great preseason games and the team seems to be really high on him, his teammates, the coaches, front office seems to be very high on him. It would seem as though there makes no sense to me to play him more than the 9 games, burn that first year. That's just my gut telling me.
I've heard both arguments and I don't disagree with either side. The reality is that this is a team in transition. And so whatever decision they make is going to have pros and cons. But for those who don't know, anytime a player joins the National Hockey League, their first contract is a 3-year entry-level contract, maximum cap hit of, I think, $925,000. I could have that number wrong, but it's certainly less than $1 million. The issue is, at the end of that 3 years, he becomes a restricted free agent, and we're entering an era where young, talented players are flexing their financial leverage on their clubs more. It used to be like, oh, he's a restricted free agent, he can't go anywhere, so we can offer him a bridge deal like the ones you saw handed out to Toffoli and Pearson.
Right.
Those sort of, you know, 3-4 years, $3 or $4 million. But if Bjornfoot has a great 3 years and is as good as Drew Doughty predicts he will be, it's entirely possible that his next contract at the end of those 3 years isn't a bridge deal. It's an eight-year
colossal deal.
Yeah. So the question is, do you want to have him sign that contract 3 years from now or 4 years from now? Because if he plays his 9 games and is sent back to Sweden, then this year, which is going to be primarily about, you know, figuring out who wants to run the marathon, then you can bring him back next season and get an extra year, essentially.
Well, I think if you talk to the people in charge, they would say he wants to run the marathon.
Yeah, no,
and
absolutely.
And is all for running the marathon, but do they want to have him run the marathon yet?
Well, I was referring more to the veterans.
Right, but does it make sense for him to, does it make sense for the team to throw him into the fire now rather than let him cook a little bit in Europe and then come back next year even better?
Yeah, I don't think there's any harm in that. And also, for an organization that spent the last 5 years tying one arm behind their back when it came to financial flexibility, I think any decision that's made to maximize the flexibility
is for me
the right decision.
Right. I go back and I always look at the Detroit Red Wings and their minor league system, right, with Grand Rapids. So their AHL team, the Griffins, for years, they had guys just percolating in Grand Rapids, right? It was just one guy after the next, after the next. And Ken Holland, when he was the GM, would just let guys sit down there. He said, why isn't he calling this guy up? Why isn't he? Because he knew when it was the right time to call him up.
Right.
And if they went a little bit too long, that was okay. So I think maybe that's the mindset. Not saying they're copying that, but it wouldn't be a bad thing to have him percolating somewhere else and let him develop even more and then bring him over here next year to play a full season. His first full season.
Yeah, the phrase Coach McClellan has used, and we've referenced it a number of times already and we'll continue to, I'm sure, over the next year or two, is the player has to be ready for the team, but the team has to be ready for the player also. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not entirely sure that this team is ready for Toby Barefoot.
and it's not like there aren't several defensemen who are ready to play right now.
Right. And we'll get to that.
You have several defensemen. Yeah. So it's not like you're saying, well, we really need a guy to step up now, because there are just an amazing number of defensemen.
Yeah. And that's one of our questions a little bit further down the list. The next question is number 9, will Grundstrom and Wagner progress? And what I meant by that is Wagner played 62 games last year. There weren't high expectations. You know, we know he's blazing fast, but he scored 12 goals. He looked every bit an NHL player. And Grundstrom came up at the end of the year and scored, you know, however many goals in, you know, I think it was like 5 goals in 17 games or something like that, and looked great. But those are 2 guys on a team that was falling apart. Nobody was giving them their best game. Everybody knew that they were having a down season. So was it a little bit of only guy trying on a team that's failing, or are they going to turn into the players that we think they are?
Or does the team have a better effort/result this year? Does the team play better this year as a team, and those guys thrive even more than they thrived last year? I think they're both going to have great years. I've seen Grundstrom play in the AHL, straight line player, up and down, gets to the net, goes to the gritty parts of the ice where a lot of guys don't want to go and pay that price. He does it, likes to play the body. Reminds me a lot of Dustin Brown, actually. If you watch him play, he reminds me a lot. His body type, the way he plays the game, reminds me a lot of Dustin Brown. Austin Wagner, I want to see Austin Wagner finish more. I want to see him finish his chances. I think he can. I'm a big fan of his speed. I'm a big fan of his game. I would just like to see him finish more. I think he would probably say the same thing. But I think the skill is there, the talent's there, the effort, the drive. Everything seems to be there. I just want to see him complete the play.
And the reason I paired the two of them together, and the reason they're the follow-up question to the Bjornfoot one, is Bjornfoot, Wagner, and Grundstrom are the 3 sort of key youthful components that are being brought in this season. Now, Bjornfoot may go back, but everybody's been talking about let the kids play, let the kids play, let the kids play. Well, these are the kids, right? There's only so many spots available, you know, as we saw in training camp. Lizotte is the other one. So that's the question, right? Is the team ready for the kids, and are the kids ready for the team? If they're not, that's, you know, that I don't want to say it sets your timetable back a year, but it makes it a little bit more difficult, right, to launch the restructuring. Whereas if Wagner, Lizotte, Barefoot, Grundstrom, if those, you know, if those guys are solid and can hold down those spots, well, then great. You know, plan is in motion. Everything's fine.
Well, I think the key to that also is getting those guys some minutes, because if you're going to play Carl Grundstrom for 6 or 8 minutes a game, you're not going to get a whole lot from him. If you're going to play Austin Wagner 6-8 minutes a game, you're not, you know what I mean? I think those guys have to play 12 to 15, 16 minutes a night to really let them go.
I think we're going to see a lot of that. I mean,
last year it was, oh, let's get the veterans more time. Let's get the veterans more time. Well, now we know what the veterans are offering. So now let's see what these younger players can bring. So let's get them some ice time. Let's get them second, third line minutes.
Obviously, it's only a handful of preseason games, but based on what we've seen from McClellan so far and the organizational shift, I trust that they'll get playing time.
I think so too.
And so the question now is just, will they justify it, and will they keep earning more?
Right. Yeah. And they should. I think they should. They both have the skills to do it. But we'll see.
So the next question, moving away from youth straight to the oldest player on the roster. I think he's the oldest player on the roster, Ilya Kovalchuk. And the question is, what becomes of Ilya Kovalchuk? Because the reality is, whether he has a great season or a terrible season, I'm not sure it matters very much.
In terms of
the general direction of the franchise, right? Like, even if he has an incredible dynamic season, right? Like, let's say he scores 40 goals and 80 points. Well, I don't think that's good enough to drag this team into serious cup contention. You may be able to turn that into a trade, but if he's producing well for you and helping other players in the lineup, why would you trade him? The flip side of that is if he scores 5 goals and is being a healthy, you know, if he gets the Willie Desjardins treatment again, then there are young players who can take those minutes, like we just said.
Yep.
And if you can't trade him, well, then you can't trade him. It doesn't matter, right? The franchise is headed towards a restructuring and a youth movement anyway.
Basically, under John Stevens, Ilya Kovalchuk was a point of game player.
That's what I'm told.
Those are the facts.
Yeah, those are the facts.
That's not what you're being told. Those are the facts.
Yeah.
And then whatever happened with Willie Desjardins happened, and things didn't work out great for either.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is Ilya Kovalchuk is back.
Yeah.
I don't see him going anywhere.
But he was brought in for a specific place in time for this franchise.
Right.
And for a specific purpose. And that purpose is no longer relevant, and that time is no longer here.
But he also earns a lot of money.
Not my money.
He also earns a lot of money.
Yeah.
That other teams probably don't want to pay him.
But the Kings can afford to retain salary if they did want to do that.
Okay, or
yeah.
The flip side of that is... Yeah. You let the player play, mm-hmm. and he's got good work habits from everything I understand. He's in the gym. He
well-liked by his team.
Well-liked by his team. It's not like he's a problem in the locker room, nope. So maybe he's good around the younger players, and you have them learn by example. This is the way you do things?
Yeah.
And if he puts if he scores 20 or 25 goals, bonus.
Absolutely.
Great.
No, this is what I say. If he scores 40 goals... It's fantastic.
Well, I don't think he's going to score 40.
But I'm just saying, best case scenario, if he has a return to form, you know, yes. Which is unusual, and I don't say this for any reason other than his age, right? Like mm-hmm. most guys in their late 30s don't turn into what they were in their mid-20s.
Right.
But if he does, it is fantastic for the fans. It'll be energizing. It'll be exciting. I just mean, just in the general scope of influence on the franchise, I don't think it much matters, but as you say, he is well liked in the locker room. He clearly has a great work ethic and a positive attitude, right? All through last season, nobody would have blamed him for pouting or demanding a trade or anything.
Never did.
He was great. So that but I had to put him on the list because we had to talk about him.
Yeah, I just don't know. I think there are limited options at this point because other teams aren't going to want to assume that salary, even if the Kings do pick up some of it. And then what he's got this year and next year left on his deal. It's not like this year it expires and his deal is up. So you're looking at another 2 years essentially with the player.
And because of his age and the contract he signed and the options of retaining salary in a trade or, you know, not having a buyout stretch out over, you know, 2/3 of the cost versus twice the length or whatever, you have flexibility. You know, and as you say, if he's an asset, if he's scoring, if he's helping the guys in the locker room, you keep him around. What, you know, it's
or you get toward the trade deadline and someone says, wow, he's got 30 goals right now. We could use a guy like that. And someone shows interest. OK, then great. That wasn't the case last year. Maybe it's a different situation this year.
But the one thing that McClellan another thing that McClellan has put an emphasis on is the notion that athletes are performers. And entertainers. And though he said you shouldn't put the focus on entertaining, you should also not be unaware that you are entertaining. And Ilya Kovalchuk can be an entertaining player. And there's value in that, even if it doesn't influence the direction the franchise moves.
He can be fascinating to watch.
Absolutely.
He's one of those people that you want to go to a hockey game to see because he's got the shot, he's still got speed, he's explosive, he's dynamic. He sells tickets when he's on. So I'm all for that.
Next up is the issue that you referenced earlier, which is the rest of the defense. Now, I didn't isolate any one player because at this point, it's Drew Doughty and the LA Kings defenseman.
I think that's valid.
So we didn't know Forbert was going to be hurt. Forbert's hurt, but he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. Alec Martinez has 2 years left and has gotten to a point in his career where even if they retain him, it's, you know, he's not going to be Doughty's partner. He's not going to be a 60-point defenseman. He's a solid veteran. But after that, You've got Walker. You've got Roy McDermott, Hutton, Ryan, all in their basically their mid-20s. All of them, you know, on short-term deals with a bunch of guys, you know, snapping at their heels in Ontario.
Jersey.
Yeah.
Clegg.
Anderson.
Yeah.
Even guys like Redekop,
Strand. Yeah, there's a bunch.
Yeah. So the question is...
Is a dearth of defensemen? Is that
yeah.
Dearth?
Is plethora. That the word?
Plethora?
So the question is, how many of these guys make a case for themselves this season? Because Anderson, Durzi, Phillips, etc. You don't have to... Now, ordinarily, Dave, I hate talking about the Seattle expansion. It's 2 years away. It doesn't matter.
But...
In this one case...
Yes.
Walker, Roy, Clegg... all would have to be taken into consideration when it comes time to protect players on that list. Now, Martinez's deal will be up at the end of the 2 years, which is when the expansion happens. If he's not traded, he'll either need a new deal and need to be protected, or you can just not sign him, wait for the expansion draft to happen, and then sign him.
Right.
You know, Forbert's deal is up at the end of this year. They have to make a decision what to do there. You know, McDermott, 2 years from now, he'll be a little bit older. Guys like Hutton and Ryan, these are the decisions that have to be made in the next year or two. And this year is a great year, if you're one of those guys, to start making a case. Because you know Doughty's going to be protected.
Right.
And the Kings can go with either 7 forwards and 3 defensemen or 8 skaters. So, I mean, I suppose they could protect Drew Doughty and expose every forward and just protect 7 defensemen. But right. I don't think that's going to happen. So this is the year, like who makes it and who doesn't. And they've got a year to sort of make the strongest case for themselves.
Well, I think Roy and Walker really had good years last year in the AHL. And then the time they spent in the NHL, I think they went a long way toward proving themselves.
Yeah.
So I think those guys are going to have the easiest time. I put easiest in quotes, the easiest time sticking with the team. I think McDermott's going to have it a little bit tougher just because of the style of the game that he plays. He's a little bigger. He's not quite as fast as the other, quick, I should say, as the other guys. So I think he might have a little tougher time. Those two guys, I'm really anxious to see how Clegg plays in the AHL this year and also how Mikey Anderson plays in the AHL this year, because those guys are also pushing for spots, not to leave Durzi out of that or any of those guys. But I think those two guys are the two guys, because Cale Clegg last year was all set to come up to the Kings, but then hurt his foot
the day before they were going
to
call him.
Right. So that was a setback. So I'm just anxious to see how he fits into this whole thing, because watching him play in Ontario last year, he was fun to watch and he's a game changer, but so is Mikey Anderson, who could be captain material, alternate captain material on both teams. And then the other two guys who, like I said, prove themselves. Walker and Roy were great last year. So
and they have...
It's a good problem to have, because you have so many guys competing for so few spots.
And Walker and Roy have a built-in advantage because they're both right-hand shots. And from everything we've heard, McClellan likes to use right-handed right-shooting defensemen on the right side and left-shooting defensemen on the left side. Now, where that gets complicated is Doughty's a right-handed shot, so that's the ceiling, right? Nobody's taken over his spot. You've got Roy and Walker for 2 years, but at some point, Sean Durzi makes his case, and he's a right-handed shot, too. And
it's a lot of right-handed shots.
Based on how well-touted he is,
yeah,
I think it's fair to say that Durzi will eventually wind up in a King sweater.
Yeah.
So you've got Strand, Durzi, Roy, and Walker all fighting for 2 spots and really probably 1 spot. So it's going to be interesting.
Good problem to have.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. And on the left side, you've got Clegg and Anderson and all these guys who can also play on the right side.
On the right side. So, yeah. No, I don't know why right shot defensemen are so hard to come by, but there was a while here where we didn't have great right shot defensemen, but now you're saying there's all these guys who are right shot defensemen. Wow. Where'd that come from?
And
very strange why that doesn't exist.
Spence is also a right shooting defenseman. He's down in Moncton, I think.
Okay.
So, I mean, all of a sudden the organization went from like one to half.
It's like having like no goalies six, and then all of a sudden you have 7 goalies in here. Yeah,
exactly. So that's one of those things where the answer won't come soon, but it has to happen.
Well, there's also the waiver question.
Yeah.
Because there are guys who you can call up and send back down who don't require waivers. You don't have to clear waivers.
Right.
So whenever a transaction is made this year, keep that in mind, because there are guys who don't have to clear. You can send up and down as much as you want, but then there are guys that would have to clear waivers, like a McDermott, who would have to clear waivers, and you may not want to lose a player like that, right, or take a chance on losing a player.
I anticipated Ledoux and McDermott both making the team because of the waiver situation.
Right.
Turns out Toby Barefoot impressed.
Right.
And
which, good for him. Good on him for that. I mean, he just jumped and took that spot. But that being said, Ledoux was also coming off an injury, so he was a little behind to start camp.
But it then raises the question, if they do send Toby Barefoot back to Sweden, do they just stick with seven defensemen and 13 forwards, or do they call one more player up from Ontario?
Yeah, that's a good question.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
The next question on the list, now we're getting into the veterans, and these are the questions that I think are most pressing as far as the future of the franchise.
Getting nervous.
Is Jeff Carter a viable offensive weapon anymore?
Yes.
I hope so.
Yes. He has to be.
He looked good in the preseason.
He looks healthier to me.
Yeah.
I think last year, was it the Achilles still? The leg, something in the lower body?
So here's how I'm describing last season.
He didn't look right.
No, but here's last season in a nutshell to me.
Yeah.
You had a gas leak in the kitchen. You had a rhinoceros hiding in your basement. There's a serial killer hiding under your bed. You had, methane leak in the garage. And then before any of that could go wrong, a meteor just smashed your entire house. So when you're going to do...
You really thought about that.
So when you're going to do the autopsy of the season and you're trying to figure out all the things that went wrong, it sort of doesn't matter because the meteor smashed everything anyway.
Right.
So we could go through every guy on the roster and say, well, he was injured. Well, he had a kid. Well, he got married. Well, he was in a slump. Well, he, bad start. Coach didn't like him. Got traded. Whatever, whatever, whatever. The meteor hit the building.
Yeah.
And so...
Jeff Carter looks healthier this year.
Yeah. That's sort of what it boils down to. No,
I think I watched him in the preseason games. I've seen him in training camp. We've seen what he can do over the years. We saw him in 12 when the Kings traded for him. He came over and essentially won him the cup that year, right? He's got a great shot. He's got a great shot, especially from the wing. I think if he's playing wing, he's utilized better than he is playing center. So if he were to see more time on the wing, I think he'd be a little more successful. You take away some of those restrictions you have as a center and the defensive responsibilities. I think Jeff Carter has to score 25 or 30 goals this year.
I think Jeff Carter's got to be happy this year. And what I mean by happy is he's got, 2 years? No, it's got to be more than that. He's got a few years left on his deal. I'll look it up so I'm not totally wrong. I think
it is 2 years left.
But the point is, at this point, the franchise has committed to the restructure. We've talked about youth, bringing them into the lineup and everything. So the question, you referenced it with Ilya Kovalchuk. You need to find out, is this guy going to be good for the kids in the locker room? Is he going to be good for the mood, for the franchise, for the buy-in, etc.? If you have a guy who's at the end of his career and is sort of, look, I made my money, I won my trophies, I live in Southern California. And I'm not saying that this is who he is, I'm just saying hypothetically. And it's not just Carter, it's a bunch of guys. That entitlement that they talked about last season, if that's what you're bringing back, then that's a concern. If what you're bringing back is a guy like David Justice in the Moneyball movie, where Billy Beane goes down and says, look, show the young kids, teach them how to be a pro, et cetera, et
while
cetera.
He's taking batting practice.
Yes, exactly. It's great.
Just saw the movie.
You've seen the movie. All right.
Yeah, really great,
right?
Yeah.
All right.
Just watched it again the other day.
Perfect. Then in that case, great. And not only great for the whole locker room, but also for whoever's playing center with him, right? If they are going to move him to wing, then, he can give pointers, he can give tips, he helps take the pressure off.
Do you think that conversation has already happened?
No.
Between A, coach and player, and or B, management and player.
I'm not sure.
The Billy Beane conversation.
Yeah, I doubt it somehow. But I will say this. I've said it before, but I don't know that I've said it with you yet. McClellan has made a couple of comments where if I knew him better or if I was more aware of his tendencies with the media, I would say, wow, those are really deliberate, pointed criticisms of players on the roster. Like if it was Pat Riley or Phil Jackson
saying it,
you'd go like, okay. His whole thing about there's some veterans who need to decide if they want to run another marathon, like, okay.
You know who he's talking
about.
Yeah,
it's not too difficult to suss out. Right. And then after the first preseason game, the split squad in Arizona, he said, you know, look, everybody's a little rusty. Everybody's, you know, it's first game preseason. But there were a couple guys that, like, maybe weren't giving it their all. And now we have evidence, which is good. And you go like, oh, okay. All right. So he's getting.
What are you getting at, coach?
Yeah. So, and like I said, I'm not singling out any player, but this is an important question because looking at the thing, Jeff Carter has 2 years left after this year. The subject of a trade was brought up by Bob McKenzie, apparently out of nowhere for no reason, because Jeff Carter denies having made the insistence that he would retire if traded. Bob McKenzie just decided to throw that out there for no reason.
That there was a trade rumor?
It was last season. And
oh, I think you meant now.
No. It was halfway through last season.
Yeah, no, I remember that.
Yeah, that whole thing. So anyway, like I said, the question is, what kind of Jeff Carter are we going to get out of this year?
Well, I think if he is moved to the wing, which seems like it's possible.
I mean, it's basically happened already in preseason.
So I think that frees him up to do a little more, to rely more on his scoring and what he's known for. And I think he has a lot better season this year than he did last year.
And sort of the second half of this question, but the next question, we're calling number five, that is Adrian Kempe a second-line center? And there isn't an answer to that question yet,
right,
but they need to figure it out before the end of the season. Because you've got Rasmus Kupari, Jared Anderson-Dolan, Nikolai Prokhorkin, and listen, let's not shut the door on Gabe Vilardi yet.
Right. Yeah.
If Adrian Kempe's not a second-line center...
Need to know that pretty soon.
Yeah, then what is he? Is he a third-line center? Is he a winger? Is he trade bait? Is he just a guy? Like, that's a question that he needs to... And if Jeff Carter is going to be good, it'll go a long way towards helping us answer that question.
Yeah, I think we'll know maybe halfway through the season.
Probably.
I think we'll get a feel for it. Remember last year we would talk after the games and say, oh, what about this guy? And what about that guy? And what happened with this line and that line?
Yeah.
I think that's going to jump out at us this year. So it seems to me that the Iafallo Brown Kopitar line is together, at least to start the season, right? So then after that, there are questions, but it seems like it's Kempe, Carter,
Kovalchuk from the looks
Kovalchuk?
Of it. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll see how that flushes out.
Yeah.
But I think we'll know. Maybe not even halfway through the season if Adrian Kempe is a second line center, because it's kind of now or never for him. Yeah. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, well,
I mean, he's had a couple of years.
I don't know about never, but let's compare him to Jarrett Stoll.
It's now or very soon.
Yeah. Jarrett Stoll in 2003, 2004 scored 21 points in 68 games. Then he had 68 points in 82 games.
Big jump.
Then he had 39 points in 51 games, 36 points in 81 games. Then he gets traded to the Kings.
Okay.
Now, when he came to the Kings, he was the second line center.
Yeah.
Like, people don't necessarily remember that part, but when Jarrett Stoll was brought in, it was like, okay, Kopitar and Stoll, great. And then at some point they acquired Shen, and you were like, all right, well, Shen's ceiling is maybe someday second line center. Then they pull off the trade for Richards and Carter, and now all of a sudden you're flush with centers, and Jarrett Stoll becomes arguably the best third line center in the league for that brief window. If one of those other guys that we mentioned, Anderson, Dolan, Kupari, Prokhorkin, Vilardi, Lazat, Amadio, whoever, if one of those guys is going to grab that second line center, is Adrian Kempe going to become the next Jarrett Stoll? Obviously he's not as dominant in faceoffs, but he also does a lot of things that Stoll, you know, he's faster than Stoll and, you know, maybe a little bit more aggressive on the forecheck, or not forecheck, but I mean, just as far as when he has possession, he pushes it a little bit more maybe. So that's, you know, he's young enough where the rest of his career, he can figure out a role and tailor his game to fit that role, but they've got to figure it out.
But he's got a unique opportunity here right at his fingertips.
Yep.
I mean, he could jump in, he could take the reins this year, he could light up the score sheet and cement himself as the number two center, but that's up to him. And I think it depends on who you're playing him with also, and if those guys have good seasons, but he's got to really take the ball and run with it, or take the puck and stick handle it, I guess would be the analogy.
I mean, it's not a coincidence that we isolated all three players on that line, right? Like Kovalchuk, Carter, and Kempe.
Right.
Which is essentially the second line this year. And if you don't have a second line.
Does he fit better with others? Easy for me to say. Better with others. Is it Grundstrom?
We'll have to figure that out.
Right? But that's what I'm saying. So by halfway through the season, we should have a better grasp of where this is headed. Because there are other guys who would willingly jump right into that slot.
Absolutely. And you know, we mentioned it with the defense, but it's true of all the forwards. Behind each of these questions and behind every shift and every play and every game has to be the reminder that there is an entire roster down in Ontario of new professionals
chomping at the bit,
just waiting to prove themselves.
I just have, from the time Kempe came up in Ontario to now his time with the Kings, I think the biggest word that's associated with him is consistency. Mm-hmm. Can he bring it every single night? Can he do? He had a great, he was brought up for the playoffs, I believe, the first time.
Yeah, and he was dynamite,
right?
Ontario,
and he was awesome. And then the next year, everyone said, oh, this kid was so awesome, we can't wait to see him. And then he had a little dip and then came back up, and then everyone says, oh, he's got so much speed and he's got so much talent and creativity. And then he kind of goes on these long streaks where he doesn't score goals or, you know, get on the score sheet. And you go, okay, well, which player is he? Is he the dynamic dynamite player that we saw in the playoffs and that can put up these good numbers? Or is he just a kind of grinder mucker, let's get it done every night and not really show up on the score sheet ever? That's what they need to find out.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be flushed out this season and probably fairly early in this season. Because you got other guys just ready to take that position.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the list of names that I just read over, right? Kupari, Anderson, Dolan, Lazat,
Velarde, if he's ever healthy. Velarde.
I mean, we've got four or five guys who could contend for,
absolutely,
you know, 2C. And then also, we haven't even mentioned Turcotte.
Right, at least a year away.
But, are we? Is anybody surprised if Alex Turcotte comes to camp next year and is the number 2C?
Not at all.
So this is it. Like, this is the season where these young kids have to. And Kempe, this is true of everybody. But every year that passes, you're 1 year less young than you were.
That's right.
So anyway, that's a big question. Now this is where we get into, I think, the real nitty gritty question.
Here we go.
Number four. What happens to Tyler Toffoli?
Well, I think that's up to Tyler.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mean, if you're asking me, which you are,
I am,
I would say it's there's an analogy that I can't use. It's now or never.
Yeah.
It has to be now, because everyone was looking toward you last year. Everyone looked toward you the year before, and you've had disappointing seasons. I think he'd be the first to admit that. I'm not saying anything.
I'm going to leap out to his defense and say that in the year that Quick was injured, he and Kopitar were also injured. They just weren't out of the lineup the way Quick was. So I'm willing to give Tyler Toffoli a pass on, I guess it was 2016-17. He had 34 points in 63 games.
But if the meteor hits the kitchen, Jesse, and there's a gas leak already in the kitchen.
Fair point. I'm just saying, I'm willing to give him a pass on that 1 year. Last year was terrible. The year before that, 24 goals, 47 points in 82 games. That's, for me, an acceptable output from a second-line player. But at this point, with all the youth and with the focus on restructuring, do you want acceptable for a second
line player? Is he a second line player? Is he a third line player?
People can't see me, but I'm doing the over-exaggerated shrug. Is he a fourth line player? I have no idea.
Right. Well, last year we talked about it, and I think this year with the emergence of the youth, there's going to be more opportunity for the younger kids. So if a player like Tyler Toffoli or whoever, if it's Ilya Kovalchuk or Jeff Carter, whomever it might be, if they're not getting it done, don't you think that the coaching staff will say, okay, it's time to insert 51 into the lineup here. It's time to insert 38 into the lineup here. It's time, right?
Yeah.
You can only let that marinate for so long and say, player X has played at this position for 25 games. He scored 3 goals. Time to give someone else a shot.
Yeah. Complicating this, though, is the fact that he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year.
Right.
And so you have essentially until the middle of February, which is not that long, right? Some of these guys you have until, you know, next offseason or two years, three years down the road. With Tyler Toffoli, you have to decide what is the asset, what is the value of the asset, and let's say he is a third line right winger on this team. Let's say that Dustin Brown, Anže Kopitar, and Alex Iafallo are the unquestioned
first line.
Yeah.
Yep.
And let's say Jeff Carter makes a successful transition to right wing on your second line with Kovalchuk. Like, let's say that line is fun and good to watch. What's your third line? Like Grundstrom, Amadio, and Toffoli? Well, okay. Is Toffoli going to take a pay cut to stay in LA to be a third line winger? And then do you want him as a third line winger when you could maybe capitalize on his value in a different way.
Well, right. And he's had several years to kind of prove himself. So
I think he, for my money, last year was awful, but he has proved himself.
Really?
He's one of those guys. Look, two years ago.
I'm actually surprised to hear you say that.
So a year ago, we did the Kings of the Round Table with, you know, Fourth Period and Mayor's Manor and all that. And the question was, who's got the most pressure on them? And I said Toffoli. And it wasn't a great showing. But in his defense, and I don't get it because I'm usually Captain Bring Down. So the fact that I'm leaping to Toffoli's defense is just as
shocking.
Just as confusing to me as anybody else. Shocking. But I really think that they never gave him an opportunity to maximize his abilities. This is a guy who won an award in juniors for being the best right winger.
I disagree with you.
This is a guy who scored 31 goals in 2015 and 16 and then got injured in 2016-17. They've never given him a really legitimate chance at being a number one winger. They've never played him with any consistency with Andrzej Kopitar. There was that 70s line that they kept going back to, even when it was clear that the tank was empty, right? I don't know if it was just fun because that 70s line or whatever. But
isn't that giving him an opportunity? That was the perfect opportunity.
It was giving him the perfect opportunity to be a second line winger. And like I said, 2 years ago, with 24 goals and 47 points in 82 games, to me, that's a decent second line output. The question is, what do you want him to be? And if your answer is always just, well, he's just going to be a second line winger. Well, okay.
I've got no issue with that, but the numbers have to be there to justify that he's a second line winger. And last year, the numbers weren't there.
No, I agree with you. Last year was awful.
Right. So is he 24 goals or is he 12 goals?
But that's why it's the big question. Are they going to give him a chance? Are they going to keep him on the third line? Because it doesn't serve their purposes any more than it serves his purposes for him to play a third line.
He wants to play as much as he can, as often as he can, and score as much as he can.
Right.
So he can get himself a new contract, whether it's here or somewhere else.
Correct.
The team would like to see him play well. So if they can market him and showcase him for somewhere else, that's an option.
Or
keep him.
Right.
I'm not against the player staying here if the player produces.
Right.
But if the player is going to have a similar year to last year.
But you got to give him chances to produce, right? Like if he's on power play two,
100%, yes.
And on line three, is he going to score enough goals?
But whose job does he take on power play number one?
Well, I don't know. They're running four forwards and one defenseman, it looks like.
Okay.
So, I mean, who's your power play one? It's Kopitar and Doughty.
Yep.
I feel like you kind of have to put Kovalchuk out there.
Kovalchuk and Brown.
Okay, well.
Or.
And Carter. Or, I mean, that's.
There you go.
So, you know.
So where?
I don't know, man.
Who does he usurp?
No, me personally, I would put him out there in place of Brown.
Okay.
Because
I mean, I could see where you're coming from.
Part of the reason is just minutes, right?
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to overload Kopitar and Brown and Doughty, right? With every special team deployment plus the 5-on-5 minutes. So if Toffoli's going to skate on your third line, then getting him on power play one might be a way to boost him some minutes where, you know, and give guys breaks, right? Like, because I love Dustin Brown. I don't have anything nasty to say about Dustin Brown's season last year or the year before that. But he's 34, 35 in November. Like, he's not a spring chicken.
Right.
And they're not getting rid of him, and he's got 3 years left.
But he takes up a lot of room in front of the net and causes a lot of issues.
Absolutely.
Other players don't like him, so.
But if
he's a good guy to have down there.
But if we want Toffoli to have a good season, and we're not necessarily concerned with point totals at the end of the season.
Oh, agree with that. Agree with that. So. I like Tyler Toffoli. I just think going back to even when Tanner Pearson was here before he was traded, Tanner Pearson, you could look at every night and say, okay, maybe he's not producing, but he's fishing pucks out of the corner.
Yep.
He's getting there first. He's giving up his body. He's getting the puck to Toffoli. He's getting the puck to Carter. He's getting the puck to whomever he's playing with. He's doing something tangible every single night. And some nights I watch Tyler Toffoli and I say, if he's not scoring, what's he doing? You know what I mean? There isn't that go to the corner, dig out the puck, work hard. I'm not saying he's not working hard, but there's not that tangible evidence. So if he's not scoring, then what is he doing? So he kind of has to score in order to.
Yeah. Somehow we've made it 38 minutes and I haven't brought up fancy stats yet.
Okay, here we go.
His fancy stats were not terrible. And it's sort of to me and a few other people, and I've heard a lot of people disagree with this, but my perspective was he was snake bitten in the most unbelievable way last year. And it just goes to that methane leak, you know, stove unplugged.
Meteor crashes in your house.
Rhino in the basement. Meteor, right? Right. Yeah. Where it's just like everything went wrong.
Sure.
It's like not, I mean, even, I suppose Wagner didn't have a bad season.
But Grundstrom did all right.
Yeah. Anybody over the age of 25 last year.
So throw out last season.
Yeah.
Fresh start for everybody. New coach. Right?
Yeah.
So let's go fresh start.
Although I will say this, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. This is just how I feel about it today.
Okay.
Could change next week. Part of me loves the fact that some of the players, including Toffoli, were so vocal about what a S show last season was.
Yeah.
But there's also a part of me that goes like, hey, man, like, keep that to yourself. Like, we know. We saw it.
We saw it, yeah. Like, we all witnessed it.
Yeah.
You, we had to be there for 41 games.
You going ahead and tattling on the other 22 guys in the room and saying how terrible the practices were. Like, yeah, I can imagine. Nobody liked the coach. The players screaming at him on the bench.
Right.
Like, yeah, I get it.
We
like,
get it.
Yeah. There was always, this is a real deep pull from back in the way back, but there was always that kid in school who would like, you know, the teacher would ask a question and the kid would raise his hand and, you know, what's 2 + 2? And the kid would be like, 5. You're wrong. And you'd just be praying that that was the end of it and you'd move on. But the kid would then have to go like, well, what I thought happened, and he'd like explain, and you'd be like, yeah. We don't need a conversation about how you got it wrong.
Right.
We all know that you got it wrong.
Yeah.
So like I said, there's part of me that likes that he was that
But you
vocal.
Like the ownership part of it.
I do.
The, hey, we screwed this up and we're going to make this right. And we know what we need to do to be better.
Yeah. And I'm not in the locker room, so I don't care about that whole, like, what's the, you know, locker room brethren and, you know, code of silence and omerta and all that. But it's just part of me that's like, all right, calm down.
They all pretty much said it, though.
Yeah. No,
they all pretty much came out and, yeah.
For sure. All right. So then that brings us down.
Does he score 20 this year?
Yeah, I think he does.
Does he score 25 this year? Toffoli, we're talking about. I think we're talking about Toffoli, right?
If everything else goes right, yes.
If everything else goes right.
If the team is good, yeah, he does.
Oh, okay.
Because, look, I like the guy, and I will defend him, and I think he, you know, I think he is good at defense. I think he can kill penalties. I think he goes to the corner. You know, he's not Milan Lucic, but I think he does what he can. But I also think he's more dependent on line mate play than other players. Like, he's not the fastest skater.
Agreed.
You know, he can generate his own shot given space, but someone's got to create that space.
Right. Agreed.
So we'll see.
Okay.
Fair
enough.
Number three.
Agree to disagree.
Yeah. Well, agree to find out.
Agree to agree.
Yeah. Number three, is Todd McClellan the right coach?
Yes.
I agree, but it's a question.
But what?
Well, we don't know.
Well, they haven't played a game yet, so we don't know.
But these are the questions. I'm just saying, these are the questions that face the team.
I said that within a split second, right? There was zero hesitation. When they made the move over the summer, I was like, that's the guy. Everyone said, oh, go and get Joel Quenneville. Joel Quenneville is not the guy for this team.
Right.
I agree. Todd McClellan is the guy for this team. Good with veterans, good with the younger players, as we've seen in San Jose, as we saw in Edmonton. Didn't have a lot to work with in Edmonton other than Connor McDavid. You can't win with one guy.
Yeah.
I think he's the perfect guy for this team. I think he's the perfect coach. I think he's well-spoken. I think people respect him. I think the young players, he's going to push the young players while at the same time pushing the older players, the veteran players. I think he's the perfect hire.
I said a lot.
I don't know who else you could have gotten who would have been better.
I don't disagree. And we said a lot last year that what this team needed was a sports psychologist to try and figure out what direction the team needed to go in the future. What had never occurred to me was, is entirely possible that the second half of last season was the sports psychologist? Or was like, okay, you bring in a coach that doesn't appear to have a real distinct direction. Maybe that was just sort of like, hey, veterans, here's 3 months. What can you do with it? And what you do with it will determine where we go. And they didn't do anything with it.
No, they didn't.
So the direction is, all right.
So we need someone similar to a Daryl Sutter who's going to come in here.
But with a softer touch.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
With some tap shoes.
Yeah, so I agree with you. But again, it's just one of those things that, I mean, he's here for 5 years. So this question, but it's a big question, but not one that's going to be answered right away. The second biggest question is, which Andrei Kopitar will we see this season? Because he...
What are my choices?
Well, over the last 4 years, or maybe five, we have kind of a 1 year on, 1 year off. Now, I will again leap to his defense. In the year that Jonathan Quick was hurt, he was hurt. Like, I don't know what was wrong with his wrist or one of his fingers or his forearm or something, but like the fact that he played at all and played well defensively, right?
Yeah.
Hero in my mind. Yeah. But nonetheless, people will point out that low offensive output for that year.
But has also led the team in scoring in, what, the last 10 seasons straight?
And then followed it up with what I consider to be an MVP season.
Right.
But then last year, not great.
But the team was not great. So if the team is not great, so Connor McDavid should have 120 points every year, whether the team is good or not. I don't know. I mean, there's... Yeah.
It's just a question, which, you know, is there going to be something bad? And it might not even be his fault, right? But is there going to be another injury? Is there going
to
be...
No, I think this is a huge year for him, and I think it's a bounce-back year. And I think he wants to prove to people that he's can get it back on track.
I mean,
and
he's the captain. The team, I mean, people are picking this team to finish with like 55 points. Like, it's crazy.
That's not going
to
happen.
No. So I think you're right.
50 maybe. No, I'm kidding.
I think a bounce back year.
I think he's going to have a big year. I think Dustin's going to have a big year. I think actually Alex Iafallo is going to have a big year too with those two guys.
You heard it here first.
Yep.
First. Yep.
And
that brings us to the number one question.
Uh-oh.
And this is where we will actually seriously start talking about the Seattle stuff.
Okay.
And that question is, and it's not even about this season, who's the starting goalie opening night 2020? Because Jack Campbell signed an extension.
Yep.
Cal Peterson signed an extension. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan Quick is signed for four more years, I believe.
Yeah.
So they now have three goalies under contract past the Seattle expansion. Now, the reason I'm bringing it up is because before Jack Campbell signed his extension, he was an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year, which meant, in my mind, they had until February to decide what to do with this three-headed goalie snake. Because Cal Peterson's deal is he's getting paid not much this year, but in years two and three, he's getting paid an NHL salary. It's entirely possible that they keep Cal Peterson in Ontario for two full seasons, but it seems unlikely. Signing Jack Campbell to that two-year extension, which takes him 1 year past the Seattle expansion draft, makes him a more valuable asset to another team because they can acquire him exclusively for the purpose of exposing him in the draft. So if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs and you've got Freddie Anderson and some guy as your backup, or if you're... I'm trying to think of another team with an established starter. Like if you're Florida and you've got Bobrovsky and or if you're Columbus and you're going to pick between one of your two, you know, wunderkind goalies, you know, and then expose somebody else, Jack Campbell becomes an incredibly enticing prospect if he wasn't already because of his play. The flip side of that is if Jonathan Quick rebounds to form and, you know, like let's say Colorado gets out to a hot start, but they lose, I'm blanking on his name, Grubauer, or if Toronto loses Anderson, or, you know, if Florida loses Bobrovsky, there's a bunch of teams who, if Jonathan Quick is performing well and they lose their starter for 4, 5, 6 months, whatever it is, he becomes an attractive alternative, or Campbell, or even Peterson, right? Like let's say Quick returns to form and Jack Campbell suddenly turns into the second coming of Tim Thomas. Cal Peterson's deal is attractive as a trade. I mean, it's like I said, they could hang on to all three of them for another year or two, but I really doubt it.
So who do you haven't given me who you think is going to be the starting?
I have no idea. That's why it's such a big question.
I was waiting for you to give me the answer.
I don't know. The real answer is I don't care.
You're just working out the logistics.
Real answer is, frankly, I don't care. I mean, look at...
No, you care, though. You care. You can't say you don't care.
So
you
care. I care from three different perspectives.
Okay.
Purely from a fan standpoint.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I'm sorry. I know that I am currently wearing a tie and occasionally appear on television. Mm-hmm. The reality is I am just a fan, right? Like, I'm just a fan with a microphone. And I think Jonathan Quick, like, he's obviously not the best king ever because, you know, there's Gretzky and Robitaille and Kopitar and right.
But he's up there.
I think he might be the most important king of all time. This is a franchise that never had... I mean, we've had Vachon, who was great. Rudy, who probably benefited from a lot of strong offensive play in front of him.
Yeah. and then no one really after that.
Yeah, like... Yeah. Now we're fighting about Felix Potvin or Mario Lessard. You know, and Lessard had a losing record, but he had like one great year.
Right.
You know, and Potvin was here for like a week.
Stefan Fiset.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
and Roman Čechmánek.
Yeah, and Jonathan Quick. I mean, did you hear the Spit and Chicklets interview with Mike Richards?
No.
So at one point they asked him, have you ever seen a goalie as strong as Jonathan Quick in that 2012 Cup run? And without even thinking about it, he said no. Like.
Yeah, he was money. There was no one better.
Beyond money. I mean, money is a... It's an insult to money.
The only one who's better, who might have been better, and I don't even say better, but J.S. Jaguar, when he was playing for the Ducks when they lost in the Cup, he was marvelous.
He was
in that whole playoff run and won the
Conn Smythe
as playoff MVP. So there's that, but I see exactly what it's 100%.
And I would make that sort of annoying semantic argument where I would say. There may have been goalies that were as good as Quick on that run, you know, like Jaguar.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anybody that was better.
I agree.
So I agree. From a fan standpoint, I would love to see Jonathan Quick play his entire career here, retire. The moment he's retired, the clouds part, a beam of light, you know, shines down and he ascends to hockey heaven. And
his numbers raised
forever,
to the rafters.
Yeah, forever sing the glory
of Jonathan Quick. Statue goes up outside of Staples.
From a, like... nerdy, you know, salary cap business like perspective, then even then I'm saying Quick stays because I think Jack Campbell's I just think the potential return on a trade for Jack Campbell is the highest of the three.
Oh, you wouldn't say a trade for a Cal Peterson trade would net higher returns.
Oh, well, maybe. I just don't think they're going to do that.
Okay. Yeah,
I don't think so either. You know what I mean? Like, they've invested in him. You know, you and I said earlier this summer before he signed his deal, I said, like, look, there's going to be some kind of back room handshake where they tell him, okay, maybe not this year, but next. Like, they're invested in him. He's not going anywhere.
Right.
So, yeah, if the option was a second-round pick for Campbell or a first-round pick for Peterson, I think they'd probably just do the second-round pick for Campbell.
Probably.
And just hold on to Peterson.
That being said, you said 2012 was a great playoff run for Jonathan Quick. Mm-hmm. It's also, we're coming up on 2020. So you're looking at...
No, absolutely.
8 years in your rearview mirror.
But I think
not to say he's not still a great goalie. He is. He had a down year last year. And can he rebound this year?
Yeah,
well, so the meteor hits the house. There's the gas leak and the rhinoceros in the basement.
Exactly.
Are they all now... Have they been evicted?
Well...
Has the house been put back together?
So the other thing is we're
moving... We have to call Homes on Homes to get this fixed?
We're moving into an era now where goalies don't play 72 games.
No.
Right? Like that was... I mean, I can't remember
how many... So he'll play 50 or 55.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked. Would you?
No.
If it was...
And let Jack play 25 or 30?
Yeah.
Seems about right.
And look, there still might be, you know, the occasional injury or a back-to-back night where they call Peterson up for a night or two or, you know, who knows.
What. Right.
But yeah, I mean... That's part of the equation as well, right? Like a guy like Quick, if you trade Campbell and you bring Peterson up, and now you have Quick playing 41 and Peterson playing 41 next year, let's just say, where's the harm, right? He's mentoring Peterson. He's, you know, instead of you unceremoniously tossing the most important goalie in your franchise's history to the curb, right? You're letting him retire, you know, and mentor and still play and be part of this. Restructuring process. I just think there's options. But, I mean, yeah, he played 72 games in 2009, 2010. He played 69
games. That's not going to happen.
In 2011, 2012. He played 72 again in 2014, 15, 68.
That was Daryl. And that was Daryl Sutter loved to have goalies play 70. Yeah. That was like the number.
Yeah.
He always used to say that about Kiprusoff. Oh, yeah. Kipper plays 70-plus games.
And I think... Kiprusoff and Quick might be I can't remember the stat, but it's like there's only three goalies that played 72 games and then actually won a playoff series.
Oh, really?
That season.
Kiprusoff was one of them?
I think it was Kiprusoff and Quick. I could have that wrong. But
So who's the Kings opening night goalie 2020?
I think it's Jonathan Quick.
I do too.
Yeah.
Strangely, I do too.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that just to agree with you. I was gonna go a different route when we opened the conversation, but now that you kind of put it that way, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I do. I do, and I don't know who the backup will be.
I think it's probably Cal Peterson. Which is tough because,
I mean,
look, this is you know,
you're
the big football fan. You know the phrase, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any quarterback.
Yeah.
Some people disagree with that phrase in hockey, but if you have three goalies, you don't have a goalie. Right?
Yeah.
And I like everything I know about all three of the guys that the Kings have right now. I mean, we've said this about Jack Campbell, right?
Nicest guy.
Mention his name, and oh my God, Dave, there's a line of people outside waiting to come tell us how nice he is.
Yeah.
And he's hardworking, and he's, you know, saved his career and everything. And look, maybe they trade Cal Peterson. Maybe they trade Jonathan Quick. Maybe they bring them all back next year. I don't know. I'm happy anyway it turns out. But to me, that's the big question. Staring.
My gut says it's 32 next year to open the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who knows after that? Keep in mind, he's only on the hook for what, 5.5? It's 5.5?
Yeah.
5.6? It's a fairly low number for a goaltender these days. Because goaltenders are signing for 7-8.
And with the amount of guys that are on entry-level deals or low money, like Iafallo and Kempe aren't huge cap concerns.
Right.
With the amount of guys that may be moving over the course of this season, cap space isn't going to be an issue. And my last final thought on the Seattle expansion draft, I think the team's going to struggle harder to find guys that fit the qualifications of to be exposed. I think it's going to be harder
there's
to do
gonna
that
be so many young guys
than to figure out who to protect. Because most of the guys, they like Turcotte, Bjornfoot, Anderson Dolan, Durzi, Anderson, like all those guys.
He just graduated college. So
you
he's
don't have to worry about protecting them. I was kind of looking at it the other day, trying to figure out just based on, and there'll be trades and signing, like the team, you know, things will change. But just sort of looking at it right now, on defense, the really only question is if you're going to go with 7 forwards and 3 defensemen, you have to protect Doughty, like contractually, have to protect him. He's got a no move clause. Yep. And so then the question is Walker, Roy, and Clegg. Which guy do you?
You see how they progress this year.
You've got 2 years to worry about it, right? But so here's the players. I know I said I hate talking about the Seattle thing, and now I'm going way deep on it, but. Doughty.
You left Derek Forbert off the list.
Well, he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. He might not be here 2 years.
That's the point.
Yeah. Martinez's deal is up at the end of 2 years. He might not be here. Ben Hutton's on a 1 year deal. He might not be here. Paul Ledoux won't be here.
Really?
Well, I mean, maybe. I don't know. Austin. But Austin Strand, Chaz Redekop, Joakim Ryan. Oh, Jacob Muvarare. Maybe he comes back next. You never know.
Yeah.
But of guys that are on the roster today, you got McDermott, Roy, Ryan, Walker, Hutton, Forbert, Martinez, and Doughty. And like I said, most of those guys' contracts are up at the end of the year, might not be here. And then on forwards, you've got Kopitar. Kovalchuk's deal is up at the expansion summer, and they're not coming back. Yeah, he's either retiring or whatever, but they're not claiming him.
Right.
Dustin Brown, I think, has 1 year left on his deal. You don't have to protect him because they're not. Why would Seattle take 1 year left of Dustin Brown, right? Like, they're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Carter, same thing. He's got 1 year left. You don't have to worry about protecting him. Tyler Toffoli's deal is up at the end of this year. You have that decision to make. Kempe and Iafallo, you have 2 years to decide whether or not you want to protect them or move on. And again, everyone will be 2 years older, right? So like Iafallo's 25 now. 2 years from now, he'll be 27.
It's a big difference.
Yeah,
it's a huge difference. Yeah, a lot can happen.
Trevor Lewis, Kyle Clifford, maybe they're here, maybe they're not. Even if they are, do you have to worry about protecting them?
Right.
Don't know. Blake Lizotte, Carl Grundstrom. I would protect Grundstrom just based on what we've seen. But again, 2 years, who knows? Anyway, I'm not going to go down the whole list, even though I've gone down most of it at this point.
Who else you got?
Amadio, Love, Mario Kempe.
We'll see.
Yeah, anyway.
We'll see.
But
Martin Furk, did you get him in there?
He's on there. But I will say this. Perkorkin, Velarde, Kupari, Fagamo, Akil Thomas, Johan Sodergren, Jared Anderson, Dolan, Michael Anderson. Mikey Anderson, Toby Barefoot, Sean Durzi, Marcus Phillips, Matt Vallalta, anybody drafted this year, last year, or the year before that are exempt. You don't have to worry about it.
Love it.
So
it's going to be a good problem to have.
It's going to be a great problem to have. Anyway, Dave, I want to thank you very much for joining
me. Thank you, Jesse. Thanks for having me in the studios. Can't wait to come and see you again.
We'll have you back real soon.
I love it.
Kings fans, thanks for listening. Thanks for going on this 10-question journey with us.
Go Kings, go!
Go Kings, go! Season starts on Saturday.
Here we go.
We'll talk to you soon.